The one who might be the most resistant to that enlightenment is going to lead us off.
And a couple rounds of shots that I did not purchase.
Everyone who's listening to this show should know how cheap I am.
You actually have to put 60 cards in your deck now, not just 56 plus 4 Gataxian probes.
It takes you a second to be like, wait, am I looking at a real event?
You know me too well.
You still can't thought seize the top of their deck.
Mostly for your super magic nerd.
We're going to do what every good capitalist does and just buy a ton of magic cards.
Oh, you brave soul! 1 week delayed, but still here on Wizard Time. Yes, we arrive where we are, when we are, never a moment early or a moment late. Okay, we ripped that off from someone, not exactly sure who. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. This is Tryhards. We get it started each and every week with What Are You Drinking? Matt, you were away from the cast last week. You forced a Byhards episode on our faithful listeners. I'm sure they're still mad at you about that. So kick it off. What are you drinking this week?
Lauren sold the crap out of some wine today. She got some free bottles, and one of them is a 2016 California Zinfandel. That it's gnarled vine. That's really, really good. So that is what I'm drinking tonight. A nice dark.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one.
From one wine connoisseur to another, Brian, are you on the home wine delivery plan again?
No, I am not, actually. I let the fates decide my choice for today. I had two beers ready to go. Depending on the outcome of the Belgian-France game today. So I had a Belgian-style white that was brewed with some coriander seeds, and then I have the Le Soule fermented with strawberries and rhubarb from the Une Année brewery out of Niles, Illinois. In honor of France's, I hate to say it, victory over Belgium today, I'm drinking the French stuff. It's really good. Strawberries and rhubarb go well in beer, especially because it's a wild style, which ironically is an American style ale. But I'll be enjoying this entire pint and a half during the cast tonight. So
you weren't the only one who was surprised at that outcome today. I thought for sure Belgium was going to win that semifinal. I had
me too.
Them picked to go through to the World Cup championship, but that's all right. France played great. They got a great young squad. They're fun to watch. I had stumbled upon on my way home today, I guess you call them tall boys, sale at my liquor store. So I was like, just like grabbed an armful. It was like, pick your poisons for like $2 a piece. So Arrogant Bastard Ale here from Stone Brewing. I've got some Dogfish Head 60-Minute IPA. And they're all the tall boys. So we'll see how this episode ends up going. For $2 a piece on those, you can't pass those up. You know, they're not the true 2x4s. There are going to be plenty for me here this evening. We hope you've got something delicious as we roll out this episode of Tryhards. This past weekend was pre-release. Usually there's not a GP on pre-release weekend, but there was one. We'll talk about GP San Paulo in just a moment. Brian, the new shop has reopened in Galesburg. You've said the community has been regaining some of its vibrancy. What did you get to do for pre-release weekend?
We met up, the Shark Tank and I and some others met up and had some beers and a couple of rounds of shots that I did not purchase prior to, and then headed down to the shop, and 54 people showed up. It was great. I opened a pool that I thought no big bombs or anything that was immediately like, oh, that's a build-around card. But I thought I put together a solid teamer deck, had a lot of red removal, a couple of lightning strikes in there. It had the Demanding Dragon on my top end, along with the Djinn of Three Wishes, which I thought was really good. To go along with that, I had two Spit Flames, and I splashed a little bit of green for like Vine Mare for some evasion, and then Draconic Disciple for some fixing and some other things. Just got matched up, I feel like, against like the worst decks, had some terrible draws, ended up 1-2, and then I was so tired that I didn't even stick around for the fourth round and just came home. But ton of fun, but I do want to ask you guys a question about this. When I showed my deck, everybody was like, oh, that looks pretty solid. And I said, okay, but here's the rest of it, and I want to know if I made a mistake. What I didn't play was black, and I did open a Death Baron, which obviously is a strong card in limited. Skeletons you control and other zombies you control get 1/1 and have death touch. Looking at this, however, I only had three other zombies / skeletons. But my pre-release promo was Open the Graves, where whenever a non-token creature you control dies, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. I just thought it was too high at 5 to try to force this whole kind of zombie skeleton idea. So would you guys have maybe gone that way and just kind of worked up to that? Or you think maybe it's just one of those calls like, yeah, it could have gone either way.
I actually played against several of those. Was that Rise from the Open the Graves? Yeah. And I'll tell you what, that card is pretty amazing. There's cards better than that, obviously, but I think with you having the Lord, and I'm assuming your zombies and skeletons were like 2 drops, 4 drops, that style of stuff, probably like a skeleton archer. If you can curve out where you go like 2-drop into 3-drop into 4-drop, and then you play that Open the Graves, I mean, you can just make an attack, and it's not profitable at all for your opponent to block. Your creatures have death touch, and then they're replaced by 3/3s with death touch if you have your Death Baron out.
I think if I would have opened 1 or 2 Doom Dissenters, I think that probably would have sealed the deal for me, because that card, again, is just, it's like a mini Open the Graves, right? When Doom Dissenter dies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll do that all day long. It was kind of a tough call, and people were like, well, I don't know what you would have paired it with, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was kind of the tough call. Sean, what do you think? With a Death Baron, Open the Graves, and a few zombie/skeletons, would you have gone that route?
I think in Constructed, we always talk about play to your strength. Know the deck types that you prefer to play and what you're good at. You can actually have that conversation in Limited as well. If you have 2 possible decks that are close to relatively the same strength, but you prefer a certain archetype, you're going to play that better because it's an archetype that you prefer. So even though play style doesn't come up as much in Limited or Draft, I think especially in Draft, because you know what you're getting because you're making the picks. So when you have a limited pool, maybe it doesn't come up as often, but I would always encourage someone to go toward a style that they love, enjoy, are familiar with, because you're going to get more out of that deck ultimately. And it sounds like your 2 options were close enough on power level that you made the decision that you thought was going to be best for you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would have loved to have maybe replayed this, referencing Harry Potter once again in the cast, to maybe take the time turner and go back and kind of replay with black and pair it with either green or maybe red with the removal and see what could have happened. So Hurley, you played a ton this weekend, didn't you?
I did. In fact, I did the midnight, the 4 p.m. on Saturday, and the 2-head giant Sunday. Everyone who's listening to the show should know how cheap I am paying all that money to go play a Grand Prix. I'm like, I'm going to get my practice in. The midnight was a terrible decision. I did not drop a single game. On the midnight, I played black-white. I had nothing particularly strong in my pool. I did have a board, board wipe, Cleansing Nova, our preview card, and then a Valiant Knight, but I only had 1 other knight. And I just outplayed and outbuilt other people. People were not used to it, and I should have lost a bunch of games, and I did not. And so I went 4-0, got home at like 5 a.m., and hated myself the next day. Saturday, I ended up playing blue-red Flyers/Control deck. I had several Goblin Instigators, Bogger Broods, Goblin Trashmaster with a Mirror Image. That was a lot of fun. Ended up actually going 4-3. I just lost to some bombs. I didn't have any super bombs in my deck. I had my promo was Windrider Sphinx. It wasn't a strong pool. I mean, by any means, it was just not a strong pool. And I usually don't like to blame the pools, but I just was getting beat down by like not Arcades, but the one that turns into like a 1/1 hexproof. And I was getting beat down by Chromium, the Planeswalkers as well. 2-headed giant Sunday. We actually had really screwy pairings. I sent this picture out to you guys. 6 rounds. We went 5-1. We lost our last one. We actually ended up taking 3rd for 9 packs apiece because of tiebreakers. Our tiebreakers were 63.8889. Second place was 64.7592. And then 68, almost flat, was match 1. We beat both the players above us as well. It was a ton of fun. I'm trying to get a ton of seal practice in. It's shocking how going back to a core format, you know, core set format, is so much different than the normal expansions, especially coming from Dominaria. I don't think this is a bomb-heavy format. I think this is a very, very balanced across the set format. Sean, what was your experience with your pre-releases?
Double Laughless Dragon Queen, double Sparktongue Dragon, double Colossal Dreadmaw, and some pretty good ramp to get there too. Ended up going 2-2. Games that I lost were tight game 3s, and I did a little kvetching to a friend of mine after that, because you still can't Thoughtseize the top of their deck in Limited. You know, you kind of work the game to this point where you cut off all their angles. They're a little quicker than you trying to get in underneath. You've got a little, like, very limited removal, but you've got these huge bombs, and so you cut off all their things, and then they go, oh, that was my only out. And then you lose the game, and it's like, oh. So that happened once with that white stag is so good. Reanimated the stag, gave it haste, and killed me with 2 1-1s because I was on two because he could tap one of my dragons, and then obviously the other one had to block the 3/3. So I died at two, and then in the other round that I lost, I had cut off all of my opponent's opportunities on the board, but unfortunately I didn't cut it off while I was at 6 life. I cut it off while I was at 5 life, and he was handless and looked at the top card of his deck and just went, oh, Lava Axe? Oh, yeah.
God.
Sure, yeah.
Bad
okay.
Beats.
Awesome.
Bad.
So, but no, it was a lot of fun, and it was, ramp is something that I enjoy occasionally, and I don't really do in Limited, but with the double Gift of Paradise and a Mana Lith and the 1/3, what is it, Green Seeker, that card is good if you're trying to play an extra color, just being able to force your way through your deck. I played 18 lands, and so it really hit quite a bit having that Green Seeker. The one thing that I did notice, though, guys, the mill archetype seems to be a real possibility in this sealed slash limited format. I had a Patient Rebuilding, Psychic Corrosion. Whenever you draw a card, they mill two. And a Millstone. I didn't think three of those was enough density. If I would have had another one of the uncommons, I would have gone for it because I had good blue control and a couple of green fogs. And the blue-green mill deck really jumped out ultra powerful in a 40-card format. Do you think that this is just something that you have to look for? It's almost like I get a pool and I want to, okay, mill check. Do I have enough to play the mill deck? No? Okay, what else can I build?
I think that's one of the great things about this set. We get to look for those kinds of things as we're building the pool, because as we start to ramp up for Minneapolis, it's going to be, okay, what are the kind of critical mass of cards you're going to need to go with a certain archetype? Because in Limited, you're just kind of on that razor's edge of, it can be okay, and you might steal a couple games, but for the long haul, is it going to do what you want it to do? And that's the important thing, is to really know, okay, do I have it? Is it solid? Can I go with this and play it confidently? Or is it just going to be one of those, ooh, I'm trying to jam something that really isn't all there?
It'll be interesting to see if that continues to develop as one of the archetypes in Limited. That brings us up to this week's Patreon raffle. We love playing Limited here on Tryhards, and we also love, frankly, giving each other's cards away. And this week, it's a chance to give away one of Brian's cards. Brian, what do you have picked out this week?
This is a card that I am expecting to jump in value right after I send this off in the mail, because somebody's going to break this card. I've been waiting for it to get broken since it basically came out in Avis and Restored. Descendant's Path. I have a nice foil sleeved Descendant's Path. I've only played with, I think, once. This is a really, really fun card. I feel like it's an EDH All-Star, but somebody should break this for Constructed.
All right, Brian is going to include the card condom for free when he ships this. Matt told me before the cast that we have 47 eligibles. Matt, you've got the list up. I've got the official Tryhards number randomizer in my hand right here. Here we go. 37.
Is Renee.
Whoa!
I don't think you can win 2 weeks in a row. We're going to have to draw another. Are we gonna let her win 2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, she's a heart of hearts.
That's luck.
It is. All right, congratulations, Renee. No shipping cost involved in you picking up the foil Descendant's Path. Back to back wins. That is a big win. Congratulations, Renee. We love having you on. If you want to get involved, just check us out, patreon.com/tryhards. You get one entry for each level at the $5 Patreon level, and then an additional one for each level above that if you want to get in on our twice-a-month raffle here on Tryhards. Guys, big GP this weekend. A bit unusual for pre-release weekend. GP San Paulo went down. It was Modern, 1,429 players, the biggest South American GP ever. Jose Echeverria on Mardu Pyromancer took down Leonardo Gucci, who was on Abzan Traverse. Brian, as much as we've talked about how much I like Pyromancer, Abzan Traverse is the kind of magic that I truly in my heart of hearts, like to play when it comes to fair magic. So I was rooting for Abzan Traverse the whole way through that finals. The rest of the top eight, Affinity, Green Tron, another Mardu Pyromancer, Red Green Eldrazi, KCI, Amulet Titan. And if you look into that top 16, you see a lot of Titan-based decks, whether it's Amulet Titan, Titan Shift. We just know that South Americans love their unfair creatures at this point. And in a game of unfair creatures, it really speaks to the power of that Mardu Pyromancer deck once again, that it was able to come out on top. I continue to be impressed.
It's got all the tools. I was really happy to see two decks in the top eight and slightly different builds as well. I know one was going, the winning deck had one Lily main and the other one had two, which is the build I prefer personally. But no, you're right. It's very resilient against so many decks. I was surprised to see Krark Clan Ironworks deck not make it to the top. Thankfully, I was thinking it was about time for someone else to be at the top of the mountain for a couple weeks. But Sean, I'm with you. That Abzan Traverse deck looked terrifying, absolutely terrifying to play again. So I want to go back and find the video coverage if there is any. Wizards doesn't always do the best job of providing video coverage for those and our South American friends and our Asian friends playing some fantastic Magic. So I hope I get to see this at some point. This would have been a stacked top eight. Really, really solid deck choices, I think, and solid play. There was a gold member, the Abzan Traverse guy. He's a gold level pro, I believe. So for him to lose to the Mardu Pyromancer, I think speaks about the power level of the deck as well.
Ryan, I can allay your fears. They did the full meal deal for this one. They flew in Riley Knight and Tim Willoughby. Oh, everybody was there. So go back. It's archived. You can go back and watch it. Matt, it's well documented on TryHards how much you love a board-filling Dirtle deck. Any deck that is playing Traverse the Uvenwald has to be right up your alley. Is this heralding the re-emergence of Siege Rhino in Modern? Because it seems like he's still ready to rumble.
Let me tell you a little story, Sean. Quick story. When I saw this pop up on my Twitter feed that this deck was, you know, in the top eight, I walked up to the counter and I said, how much is two Mishra's Baubles? Because that's how many I'm missing. Because you know me too well, because this is exactly the style of deck that I love playing. There's a couple cards here. I'm like, okay, you know, I don't understand, but I love the Shriek Maw on the sideboard and, you know, even the Gaddock Teague. I never thought I'd see where the Abzan decks would come back with Siege Rhino, but yeah, let's go with it. Also, like the red green Eldrazi that was there is pretty standard. That was a fun looking deck. You know, this was one of the, while we were playing pre-release, they had this up on the TV. And I got to say, it was actually relatively exciting to watch Modern for a change. And I'm not sure what made this one different versus what we typically see.
Lightning quiz, guys. I'm going to read off those top eight decks again. Can you tell me what's missing? Mardu Pyromancer, Abzan Traverse, Affinity, Red Green Eldrazi, KCI, Green Tron, another Mardu Pyromancer, and Amulet Titan. Brian, any guess what's missing from that top eight? And I'm not talking about deck styles. I'm talking about something a little more obvious.
I was going to say humans.
Matt?
Yeah, I was actually looking and seeing no humans there.
There are no islands in the top eight.
Oh!
Okay.
Islands in the top eight of that Modern. That was very interesting to me, the way that broke down. Mardu Pyromancer was the most popular deck on day one, 8.9%. No deck had more than that, so no deck was at least 9% of the metagame. Tron, 8.5%. Jeskai, 7.6%. Humans, 6.8%. Burn, 6.3%. Affinity, just over 5%. And Collected Company at 5%. So I thought that was very interesting, the way things shook out in San Paulo. Legacy, it's got an opportunity to grab some of the spotlight. Coming off of last week's B&R announcement, we're now quickly sliding toward Pro Tour 25th anniversary, where the team format is going to showcase Legacy in many of its facets. Brian, you pointed out that the Modo Legacy Challenge that went down over the weekend was really the first large-scale tournament that we have to get data from after the B&R announcement. What did you find interesting seeing what happened?
A few things I found fascinating was decks 1 through 8, 9 through 16, not a single Grixis Delver deck, not a single four-color control. And guys, it's not that it's surprising that we didn't see it, because obviously those decks have been neutered by the B&R announcements. Just going through deck lists and seeing new styles and different things kind of crop up, it is somehow refreshing, and it still takes you a second to be like, wait, am I looking at a real event? And yes, this was definitely a real event. So first through eighth deck list on this Modo Legacy Challenge, first and second place guys, surprisingly, Sneak and Show, basically the same 75, running the Omniscience package, two of main deck. Death and Taxes was in third place. There was a Punishing Abzan. There was a Painter's Servant deck, which I thought was fantastic. A Dredge and a Tron deck. So the big mana and the graveyard, we would not be surprised to see those with the banning of Deathrite Shaman, obviously. 9 through 16 was a little bit different. There was a Goblin Bombardment deck, a Storm deck, two of the, I'll call them big red style decks, like the Red Stompy or the Dragon Stompy prison decks. Then we had one Miracles and two Temur Delver. There was a great article on SCG today by Jadeen Komplarins about the return of Temur Delver. I think this is something that you're going to see. And further down this list, it was very populated with a lot of different variations of Temur Delver. It's surprising to me that Temur Delver can make such a comeback, and it still remains to be seen. We're obviously in a very, very small data pool here, but I think everybody is expecting to see a lot of Temur Delver. I'm excited about seeing that deck crop up in the future. Guys, any other that catch your attention? Or what are you looking forward to seeing next time you sleeve up Legacy?
Well, no surprise to me that Temur Delver is the scourge again. If you weren't playing Legacy 6 years ago during the quote-unquote golden age of Legacy, now that just comes down to what you like to play, but I've heard that term bandied about a bit. Rug Delver, Temur Delver, it was the scourge of the format. It was what warped the format around it. One mana Stone Rains, Wastelands, flip their Delver, couple of counter spells, lightning bolt, it's over. It is a pure tempo deck, and it's terrifying to play against if you're not set up to combat that correctly. The fact that Sneak and Show is back, not surprised by that. They had a terrible, terrible Grixis Delver matchup. It's one of the linearly powerful decks, sort of like Reanimator. You can call Reanimator a linear deck because you're trying to accomplish the same thing each time, or a combo deck because you're trying to put a couple of cards together. Both of them were suppressed by the presence of four main deck Deathrite Shaman in 53% of the field whenever you registered something. So those were both bad matchups. Not surprised to see Sneak and Show once again show its fangs. If I'm picking the number one most wanted, the thing that I'm planning for at the beginning of this new Legacy format, it's the Temur Delver deck, because people know how good it was. The cards are pretty inexpensive. And if you look at how they interact with you, it's another reason that Deathrite was suppressing them, not because of their mana denial plan, but because Nimble Mongoose is a 1-1 until you achieve threshold. Well, it just gets brick-walled by Deathrite Shaman, and so does your Delver if it doesn't flip. So this deck has regained a lot of its power in the face of Deathrite Shaman not being ubiquitous in the format. So if you're planning to beat a deck right now in Legacy, you better have a plan for Rug Delver.
So I think you're going to see Rug Delver for a short amount, and then you're going to see the kind of the rise of the big boys in Sneak and Show, Show and Tell for style decks. But the one unknown we're doing here, if you rip all these deck lists from 4 years ago, you would say, okay, this is the format. Like, this is how this works. The negative on that side is that Death and Taxes got a lot more powerful here recently. It got a lot more powerful because it got a lot better cards. So I think you're going to see Death and Taxes kind of suppressing the format just a bit, not a ton, but just a bit. And it's going to cause some of these decks to kind of warp into new style decks.
But Hurley, that goes right back to Deathrite Shaman not being in the format. So Rishadin Port actually does something for you. I don't know if you guys have read the text on Brightling, the new quote-unquote tech for Death and Taxes. That's a real card.
Oh, yeah. Brightling is definitely a real card. I do not want to be playing against that card when I'm sleeving up Legacy, and I don't care what I'm playing. Yeah, that's going to be something where everybody's going to have to get ready for.
Very cool. The Modo Legacy Challenge over the weekend. Our first look at what this new-look Legacy format looks like without Deathrite Shaman and without Gitaxian Probe. You actually have to put 60 cards in your deck now, not just 56 plus 4 Gitaxian Probes and see where that takes you. That
brings I'm super excited about the format. That's all I got to say.
It's going to be so much
new
fun.
Format looks
loving it. That brings us up to this week's news. Matt, I'm going to lead off with you on this one. I think the biggest news headline was Wizards revealed their San Diego Comic-Con 5-pack of Planeswalkers since we last got together. First of all, uber-popular magic artist and Therese Nielsen did them. Chandra, Torch of Defiance, Gideon of the Trials, Jace Cunning Castaway, Liliana, Untouched by Death, and Nyssa, Vital Force. Three of those are going to rotate in like a couple of days. So is that going to maybe suppress the value? The art is tremendous, except for Gideon. He looks like he's like taking a nap, in my mind, if you really look closely at that. But Therese Nielsen is a fabulous artist, beloved by the community, and for good reason. They've also moved the price point on this to $99.95, which $100. They've been toying with that price point a little bit. Do you think this is going to linger on the shelves like last year's did, or is this going to be another hot item like a few years ago?
I think this is going to be a hot item mainly because of the art. And the other thing is mostly for your super magic nerds, but Christine Sprankle, who's no longer a member of the community, she did some of the modeling for this for so that Therese Nielsen could draw her. She did the Chandra, the background in Gideon, the Liliana, and then the I think the background in Nyssa, if I remember right, as well. But this is a first where these cards, some of these cards, specifically the red one and I believe Gideon of the Trials were in the 2017 one as well, yes. But the art on 2017 was just not as loved. These are going to fly off the shelf. I mean, that's all there is to it. If you look at eBay, I think people are selling them on eBay already for like $250, which is pretty normal. I haven't seen them pictures of them yet because they just kind of revealed them. So I don't know how the foiling process is going to be either, or the card back, since they're using a different card printing technology now in the Japanese or the European style card printing technology. So I'm excited about them. Outside of Vital Force and Chandra, and even really Gideon, I mean, those are all three of those are really powerful. Cunning Castaway has yet to really find its legs. Liliana, Untouched by Death, I pulled her in my Friday night pre-release, and she is awful, like just terrible. Now, in a zombie deck, she's going to be awesome, but in general, that's a very, very narrow Planeswalker. So, but I think between Chandra and Gideon of the Trials, that's going to drive a lot of sales as well, and as well as the art. So I'm excited about them.
So you're erring on the side of collectability versus playability with Chandra, Gideon, and Nyssa all rotating.
I mean, you got to remember, Vital Force sees play outside of Standard, and Chandra sees, I would consider, relatively heavy play out in Modern. I mean, medium-level play, I would say. And then Gideon sees play in a lot of the control decks in Modern as well. So you've got three playable Eternal staples there where that are seen play outside of the Standard format.
Sounds amazing. Looks like Wizards has, once again, taken this back to a product that's going to cause hysteria at San Diego Comic-Con, which, let's get down to it. This is really marketing at this point, and marketing the game and creating that excitement around it. And it seems like they've done it so well once again with this release coming up for San Diego Comic-Con 2018. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. I know you've got a funny looking cat, but are you adding a funny looking big cat to your collection this week?
A Johnny Adversary of Tyrants from the new core set. Powerful as hell. You can get them for about $12 to $14, depending on where you're getting them from. And I think this is an easy $20 Planeswalker moving forward in Standard, especially post-rotation. You might see a slight dip down to about $10 if he doesn't see any play immediately. He pairs well, relatively well with the new Vivian Planeswalker as well. And I can't believe he's only about $12. So I would pick up your Johnny's. First time this pops up, this is a $20 or $25 Planeswalker easy.
This week's In the Elevator, a Johnny Adversary of Tyrants. I'm sorry, I just got a chuckle. Our buddy Christian, he opened one of these across from me at pre-release, and he was so frustrated because he goes, yeah, I've got this. I don't have three other cards to put in this deck. Like, this is literally it, let alone, you know, the 21 other cards you need to put around it. So, Christian, wow. I feel your pain. He didn't have a good day, despite the fact that he cracked in a Johnny. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. Brian, looks like we're going current again. Let's brew.
I am pretty excited about a lot of the blue cards that have been coming our way in Dominaria, Teferi, with all kinds of good stuff. And now with M19, I feel like there's some really, really good cards that we can take advantage of and maybe make the big blue menace come back to us. So the card that I want to look at today, which kind of pairs well with Urza of all things, is Sai, Master Thopterus. This is a card that I think could have some legs in Standard if people get their brewing hats on to go with this, and we could take to the air and overrun our opponents with Thopters. So, Sai, Master Thopterist. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying, and spend one generic and one blue, not tap it, just spend the blue and a generic, sacrifice two artifacts to draw a card. This is at the cost of a blue and two generic for a 1/4 body that goes along with it. I feel like there's a lot of synergy that could go with a lot of different things, especially before Kaladesh rotates. Sean, I'm going to start with you. Are you excited about Sai, Master Thopterist, either before rotation or even after rotation?
Well, I was surprised because I know that Battle Bond was successful, but I didn't expect to see a partner mechanic released in Core 2019. And they did. You team Sai with new Tezzeret. And those are just partners right there, because he's making Thopters. Tezzeret's drawing you two cards if you have three artifacts in play. Sai's sacrificing thing to draw you more cards. So Sai and Tezzeret, I'm thinking BFFs right now for as long as they're in Standard. If you're looking at pre-rotation, the first thing that jumps to my mind is Whirler Virtuoso. We've seen some of the Jeskai control decks right now in Standard. And Sai, easy on the mana cost, powerful on the abilities. And the fact that he is a 1/4 body can't be lost either for his casting cost of 3 at this point. So I think this is a card that's going to give you a lot of options going forward. And he's going to team up with a lot of different cards, I think, at different points in the format. He might be at his most powerful right now because we have the vehicles and those are artifacts. So this is a card that's on my radar to pick up now while it's cheap. But I think there's a lot of brewing opportunities that are going to come up.
Hurley, what about you? Are you high on Sai as well?
I really like this card. It is a legendary creature, so that does have some synergy with some of the cards from Dominaria. There's a Storm deck that's running around in Standard. Basically, just cast a bunch of artifacts, uses Mox Amber from, you know, like I called 2 weeks ago. I got to say, from all those, I'm really high on this card. I think he, you know, Sean said it again, I think he goes well with Tezzeret. He survives a lot, he blocks well, and he just does everything you want him to do. So I think there's a Storm deck out there somewhere, and I also think that this might even see some play out in the Eternal formats because of the ability to just basically free cast so many, you know, zero drop, one drop artifacts that, you know, going in with a paradoxical outcome style. And I think that's very, very important.
I think you both hit it on the head. There's the Tezzeret and Sai pairing that I think is pretty obvious. But I also think that this goes so well with Teferi for this very specific reason. Let's say you do what you're going to do with Teferi and you plus him. You're going to draw a card. If you've got a Thopter on the battlefield, which is pretty easy to do, as Sean said, with Whirler Virtuoso, if you've already had Tez in play, you're drawing two more cards if you just zero Tezzeret. That's three cards every turn, and you're just going to out-tempo, you're just going to out-muscle your opponent with that kind of thing. And only at 5. Both of those Planeswalkers are at 5, and Sai's only at 3. So I think this is very, very easily doable in blue control decks, and I would love to see a world where people are turning their Thopters sideways and keeping their Planeswalkers back and well-protected.
Sai, Master Thopterist, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. We all played the pre-release. We all had our moments, great or otherwise. So I'm wondering whether or not that brought on some new enlightenment. The one who might be the most resistant to that enlightenment is going to lead us off. Matt, go ahead.
Why am I resistant to that enlightenment? No, I just played a lot. Honestly, this is the first time and been a long time that I've been able to actually do, you know, an entire weekend of Magic. I don't know if you guys talked about it last week. I had a really, really terrible time with all of my electronics, and that's why I wasn't here. And then on Friday, I had a really terrible time as well. The girlfriend got rear-ended, so we had to spend, she's fine, but we had to spend all day, you know, dealing with that. And then we had some issues with where we wanted to live next year. She said, I'm going to be useless. And I said, I'm going to play Magic. I don't know how stressed I would be if I didn't have the pre-release this weekend and just forget about life for the weekend. But I'm practicing a ton in sealed, looking forward to the GP that's coming up that we're all going to do. And I got to say, it's going to be a ton of fun to do it. I definitely want to give it my best to be able to say I built the best deck out of my pool I opened.
Yeah, building the best thing that you can out of what you open is so important when you're playing limited or just taking the best card when you're playing in draft. And at this time of year, I revert to the same thing when I open prize packs. I'm not somebody who like stacks them up in a corner. No, I take them home. I pop them. It's a game. That's what you should do. That's awesome. But when I open them and I know that like this Friday night at the LGS, it's draft night. And we aren't big enough to have one that fires every week. So whenever new sets come out, we always know draft is going to fire. So when I was opening my prize packs, I open them and look at them and go, what's my first pick? Okay, if that color is cut off, what's my next pick? And I try to get a sense of what's going on in the packs and some kind of pack order. So just putting on your thinking cap and starting to think about the opportunities that you have in order to get ready to win. Brian, what did you get better at Magic this week?
Well, I Hurley said it best, and I think we're all kind of leaning toward that, which is really great. Is from the time the set was released just this past Friday to going to Minneapolis, I think we've all been on this kind of, oh crap, we have a very, very short amount of time to kind of solve this sealed format, so to speak. So without access to Modo, we're going to do what every good capitalist does and just buy a ton of Magic cards and just crack packs in packs of six and open up the best sealed pool. And I'm really happy that everybody's kind of on board with this. Being tryhards, we do have the financial ability to do this, not all the time, but sometimes, which is great. So we're going to be able to have so many different opinions at the house from all of us talking beforehand when we finally get up to Minneapolis, the Galesburg crew, the Quincy crew, and Hurley, Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all kind of bringing their ideas to bear. And there's some really, really good players among all of us. And I'm really excited to kind of see how all that energy works and to kind of debate, hey, more removal, more creatures. What's the ratios? Do you always want to go this archetype if you find this card? Yeah, but it's dependent on this. I think that's what I'm really, really excited about, because I've never really prepared for a sealed, right? Whenever you show up for a pre-release, which is kind of the namesake for the sealed tournaments, you go and you're like, well, we'll see what I open and see how my deck building skills are. And, you know, sometimes it's great and sometimes not so great. But you got to marry that deck building with the play style, too. So getting those decks built, playing them out, seeing what happens, seeing what's strong, really looking forward to that over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Should be a whole lot of fun. And coming up this weekend, you want some more legacy data points? SCG Worcester, Team Trios. It'll be difficult to mine, but if you're of a legacy mindset, you'll get some more information on what's going on this weekend. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Tryhards. We'll convene again next week.